When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at FliesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local friends like Madison Firefighters Local 311. Joining us now, the president of the United Steelworkers, Leo Girard. Leo, you've had a busy last couple months.
Yeah, I've had a busy last couple of months for sure.
It's a complicated time, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is complicated by a lot of external issues, but when it comes to manufacturing and jobs and that, it's really quite simple. But it gets complicated by the one percenters and the global free traders who would throw anybody under the bus.
They're singing from the same choir book. I talked to Scott Paul from the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and he almost described it as a religion.
Well, they get addicted to products that are dumped into the U.S. market, whether it's shoes, clothing, steel, or aluminum. They get addicted to that at a lower price. And not only when I've told people, in particular, most of these countries don't only export products, they export unemployment. And they do it very deliberately. They have domestic overcapacity, and that keeps their people working. And then they'll ship those products, whether they're shoes, clothing, chickens, or steel, under the cost of production, and then challenge us to do something about it.
Right, and it's predatory, right? Their goal is to drive us out of those industries, and then once we're out of those industries, they're going to jack the price up.
Let me give you three quick examples. I'll try to do it quick. Solar panels. More than 3 years ago, the Chinese said publicly I say, that their objective in their five-year plan was to dominate the global solar panel industry, even if they had to sell under the cost of production for some period of time. So you look at what happened then to the global solar panel industry outside of China. It's collapsing. They're barely hanging on. Well, you can't make a solar panel without aluminum, and you can't make it without glass. So they're expanding their aluminum facilities for that and their glass facilities for that. And they're exporting their solar panels to us and putting our people out of work. Paper, we file a case with the International Trade Commission. We win, prove that they cheated, but the companies were making some money and there hadn't been any layoffs yet, so there's no remedy assigned. We come back 3 years later, companies aren't making money. We've lost 7,000 jobs. A remedy is applied. China outweighs the remedy and does it again. I can go on and on. We did one in steel from South Korea. The South Korean built a brand new what's called an oil country tubular mill. The oil country tubular mill, they don't drill 1 foot in South Korea. They build their mill. They import steel from China at dump prices. They don't care. They're getting it cheap steel into South Korea. They use it to make oil country tubular goods, and they target the American market. They don't drill sly. They don't drill 1 foot in their own country. That mill was built exclusively to be the recipient of dump Chinese steel to get around the tariffs that we won on the unfair trade case and subsidize the South Korean oil country tubular goods industry, and our two mills are shut down.
This morning.
And so you get these goddamn, I shouldn't say that, but I'm sorry?
You can say that.
Yeah, you get these guys who are saying, oh, we got to be worried about a trade war. Look, we're in a damn trade war. We're just not fighting back. Is it okay to continue to shut our mouths and do nothing about China having a $350, $370, $390 billion trade deficit on an annual basis? Since we did the trade deal with South Korea, if we went from a balanced economy to about $120 billion deficit a year, are you telling us if you're a free trader, just shut your mouth and let them do this to you? Or are you saying fight back? My view is all we want, and our members aren't looking for a special deal, all we want is a level playing field. And if we have a level playing field, we can win and we can compete. But so, we can't have our steel companies and our aluminum companies and our shoe companies competing against countries that cheat.
So of all the things that I heard during the debate after the first tariffs were announced, I think this is probably the most obnoxious. This is Joe Scarborough with one of your favorites, Richard Haass, from the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah. Obsessing, literally, on 1800 technology. I'm not kidding. While they're looking at AI, the American president is looking at mining. He wants to revive mining, like he's in York, England in 1863. It's true. And while they're talking about, Donald Trump is talking about recreating a manufacturing base that owes more to like 1957 in the Great Lakes region than what China's doing. It's really frightening.
You're exactly right. We're about a century different from China. They're looking ahead. We're looking back. The president asked the other day, what's a country that doesn't produce steel? Well, that might be a country that's leader in AI or in alternative energy or in robotics, that's training its workers, not for the jobs that will never come back, but is training the workers so they're able to take the jobs that will come into existence.
Heard enough?
It makes me sick to my stomach. Let me say a couple of things. The steel industry, the aluminum industry, are what we call basic industries. Without those industries, you can't make anything. You can't make advanced intellectual products. You can't make an iPhone. You can't make an iPad. You can't make a wind turbine. You can't make a solar panel. You can't make geothermal. You can't make high-speed rail. You can't do any of that if you don't have a steel industry and a basic industry and aluminum industry. Our steel industry in the United States and Canada is the most productive steel industry on the planet. Our steel industry can make steel with the lowest emissions per ton of any country in the world. These guys just have their head up their ass and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. It just infuriates me. And the reality is that, let's take, for example, they keep saying renewable energy, they win the wind turbine. Let me tell you this, you can't make a wind turbine unless you have iron ore. You can't make a wind turbine unless you have metallurgical coal. You can't make a wind turbine unless you have cement. You can't make a wind turbine unless you've got fiberglass and unless you put that together. You can't have iron ore unless you got a big truck. You can't have iron ore unless you got a big shovel to dig it up with. You can't have iron ore unless you got a mine to mine it from. It's disgusting how uninformed and intellectually bankrupt they are when they get to thinking they can run their mouth and say things like were said by those two fools that know nothing about what they're talking about.
Here's another one. This is Chuck Todd talking about Sherrod Brown.
By the way, about the only positive response I've heard to this came from like Sherrod Brown. right, a handful of sort of old school blue collar Democrats.
No, that's right. I mean, and he's playing to that.
Did you hear them laugh and sneer?
Yeah. Well, the thing is that pick something, pick anything you want. United States can make a washing machine. The United States could make an iPad. An iPhone. The United States can make an airplane. The United States can make a car. The United States can make a car that's fully loaded with computerized gadgets. So what part of manufacturing does this idiot think is sort of 1950s? Not a damn thing. What's 1950s is the way that their brain ticks.
Well, it seems to me that every environmental group, every labor group, every consumer group has been blowing the whistle on these free trade deals for a very long time, right? This is a wide swath of American people, and yet there's this little clique of people that make up the editorial section of the New York Times, the Washington Post, and then the people on TV.
There was a posting I saw on one of the MSNBC shows that showed all the, quote, major employers that were opposed to the announcement that Trump made on tariffs, both on intellectual property and on steel and aluminum, as an example. And my question is simple. China is cheating. Use China as an example. I could do the others, but China is cheating. So what should we do as a nation? Say to China, we don't want to anger you, so we're not going to do anything about your cheating, so you can keep cheating. And in fact, I'll tell you what, you should increase it because, you know, you have the capacity to increase it. We don't. So we're going to get all these, you know, if you saw the chart, it was Walmart, it was Target, it was Kohl's, it was Lowe's, it was Home Depot. All the people who want to sell you stuff that we used to make. And by the way, what their dishonesty is, they used to make those products here. But if they made those products here, we'd use the same advanced technology they're using over in China. The difference is our members and the workers in America might have $20 an hour in health care. In China, they got $2 an hour and nothing. So don't fool with me about somehow we're intellectually unable to produce these things at a competitive rate. All we want is this, all we want is a level playing field. Give us a level playing field and see what happens. We'll kick their butt.
So this morning, Steve Rattner, I'm going to see if I have the clip here. I think this is it.
On the steel and aluminum tariffs, and then yesterday basically retracted most of them against all the allies, against everybody pretty much except China and Russia. And so it's destabilized the markets. They don't quite know which way this guy is going to go. And so to suddenly launch out with all these tariffs on China without really much warning is destabilizing the market.
So as you say, most people agree that China is protectionist and something has to be done about this. If not this way, which way would you approach China?
Well, I think there's certainly a more gradual, more diplomatic, and I know people will say diplomacy with China has failed, and so you finally had to do something. But the Chinese are not stupid, and they don't particularly want to be in this position. We you know, they export over $500 billion worth of stuff to us. We export $150 billion plus or minus of stuff to them. And the idea would be to try to get them to the table in a more graceful way. Now, one of the interesting things about this is really, not to put in two grand terms, this is kind of a clash between traditional liberal democracy and state-directed capitalism. Mm-hmm. That the Chinese are on a forced march to create what they call their own industry leaders, their own great companies in some of the fields that we're in, and that's what they're all about. And we have to compete with that.
We have to compete with that. He basically admits they're cheating, right?
Yeah. Look at that again. This is a guy that knows nothing, runs his mouth, lives in a sheltered millionaire world. And here's the reality. The United States in particular has had, over the last 15 years, five what they call high-level meetings on steel to talk to China about reducing their domestic overcapacity. Do you know what the result of that has been? In those five separate meetings with China promising at every meeting that they would reduce their domestic capacity to not to create undue hardship in the rest of the world, they went from producing 500 million tons of steel 15 years ago to last year producing 1.2 billion, with a B, tons of steel. That's what democracy, that's what dialogue has done for us. Dialogue with China has let them create a $600 billion surplus. Does Steve Rattner live with his head up his butt? When I told you about solar panels, they had the audacity, China did, to say publicly what they were going to do. And we've done not a damn thing about it. And that applies in every industry that I mentioned, tire and rubber. We won a case against China under 421. They waited till the remedy expired, and then they put 50 million tires in the U.S. market in less than 6 months. And pick anything you want, and I can show you where they're cheating.
Right.
And these idiots think we should do nothing about it. We shouldn't piss them off. Well, let me tell you what drove the market down yesterday. It wasn't an announcement on tariffs. It was the fact that the president fired his whatever they call that.
National Security Advisor?
And appointed
that Bolton?
Bolton wacko with a mustache. And on top of that, the Federal Reserve Board announced yesterday they were raising interest rates by a quarter point. So these idiots talk about that stuff, McMaster, and they talk about tariffs, but they didn't talk about the Federal Reserve raising it by a quarter point, throwing the market into a tizzy. You know, they live in a sheltered world, and again, it really ticks me off.
All right, we'll talk more with Leo Girard next from the Steelworkers at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com. We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Teachers Incorporated and the Teamsters, Local 695. All right, so Leo, there's been very little coverage of the renegotiating NAFTA. I talked to Lori Wallach from Global Trade Watch a couple weeks ago about this, and she had some interesting things that were positive and some things that were negative that are going on. Give me a sense of where you think we're at in the renegotiations with NAFTA that are positive or negative.
Well, look, I'm not sure what the day-to-day give and take that's going on at the bargaining, at discussions with NAFTA. I do know this, and this is the six major industrial unions in America told the USTR, the Secretary of Commerce, and the president, that if there was a renewed NAFTA, that under our judgment, our collective judgment, was going to be good for workers in all three countries, we would evaluate whether or not we could support that trade deal. If we have a trade deal that comes out that it's tweaking here and tweaking there and making life much more comfortable for the already rich and powerful, then we're going to work like hell to defeat it. And so we're not part of the day-to-day give and take, but we've laid down our marker of what it would take to get labor support and what it would take to not get labor support.
Are you on the same page with the United Auto Workers and Unifor about this, the parts content and automobiles?
On the same page. I'm never on the same page with Unifor.
All right, explain.
Unifor has done nothing but raid other unions in Canada and cause a lot of dissension. They've withdrawn from the Canadian Labor Congress.
Really?
So that they would have the ability to raid the hotel and restaurant workers in Toronto, and got caught. And so I'm extremely disappointed. That's not the sort of the history of the UAW and CAW way back when. So I'd just as soon not talk about it, but you asked the question. But we are on the same page with the auto workers about looking at the rules of origin, and we have to stop the exodus of the auto industry and the supply chain on their way to Mexico. And there's no sort of misunderstanding of that. Mexico has a low-wage strategy for their country, and that low-wage strategy for their country is what's attracting them there. Plus, they have a low duty rate of shipping any vehicle from Mexico to United States or Canada. And the reality of that is really quite simple. They don't make a car in Mexico. They assemble them. And they assemble them with parts from Vietnam, from Singapore, from China, from India, from Malaysia, the other parts of the world. They assemble them from there. And what that does is put downward pressure on the supply chain, so there's an exodus of the automobile supply chain from the United States and Canada. And so we're very, very much in tune with the UAW and the IAM and the Teamsters and all of the labor movement to talk about the supply chain and the rules of origin, so that Mexico doesn't get an advantage of bringing parts in from those parts of the world and assembling it in Mexico and calling it a North American vehicle.
How does this all fit in? I'm not sure if you were at the meeting or not. I was in Canada last weekend in Sault Ste. Marie, and the Prime Minister had just been at the Algoma Steel Mill, or SR Steel Mill, whatever you want to call it, you know, reassuring steel workers that they were going to be okay. Were you there for that?
I wasn't at... I wasn't at the roadshow that the Prime Minister had. He went to Quebec to one of our aluminum mills. He went to Stelco. I'm not sure if he went to Algoma.
Yeah, he was there.
And then he went out to I think out to Alberta to one of our tube mills. So I wasn't on that roadshow. But we've made sure that we were able to explain to the USTR and the Secretary of Commerce and to the President that based on the facts, the United States had a trade surplus with Canada on steel, and that the Canadian steel industry and the its supply base is integrated, so that you'll have steel come from anywhere in the U.S. to anywhere in Canada, get banged into something and then get sent back. You'll have the same thing with steel from Canada going to Detroit. And probably the one of the more interesting comments I heard was from Dennis Williams, the president of the UAW, who said he can look out his office window and see the cars and trucks going back and forth from Canada to Detroit and from Detroit to Windsor. So that we made the point clear to the administration that we ought to focus on the what I call the evildoers, the countries that cheat, and the worst culprits are the ones that were identified by the president and by Wilbur Ross.
And it looks like that.
Important thing that I want to make is that Wilbur Ross did something very, very important, and he was asked to check into whether or not in steel and aluminum in particular were what was going on was a threat to U.S. national security. So what Wilbur did is he looked backwards 25 years to see what happened to these basic industries. And then he said, if the same thing happens in the next 20 or 25 years, it will be a really bad circumstance for U.S. international security. And so we have to stop now what's going on before it gets irrevocable. And so he did prove that what's been going on to steel and aluminum from countries like China and South Korea and other places is a threat to national security.
So the notion that this was just dropped out of nowhere, these tariffs, was a ridiculous lie.
Yeah, it's completely a lie. That look, if you keep doing what, you know, like I keep coming back, all our members don't want anything special. They want a level playing field. So pick a place. If we keep doing what we're doing with China for the next 25 years, can America sustain an annual trade deficit in durable goods for the next 20 years of $350 to $400 billion a year with China, $110, $120 billion a year with South Korea, trade deficits with the European Union? The only country that has a trade surplus that America has a trade surplus with is Canada, an integrated economy. So if you're prepared to keep doing what you're doing for the next 20 years, what will the country look like? I mean, ask yourself a question. Don't trust me. Ask yourself a question. What will America look like when, if we do the same thing in the basic industries for the next 25 years, similar to what we did in the last 25 years? What will the country look like?
Well, and that's a
so these little pipsqueak blowhards that know nothing, that are living in their million-dollar homes and living in their gated communities and living in their, you know, second and third and fourth home that they go to by private jet, you know, ask them if they want their grandkids or to live in the same kind of world 25 years from now that what it would look like.
Let me finally ask you about Connor Lamb's victory in Pennsylvania. You obviously, obviously the steelworkers played a big role in that. How proud of you, how proud were you when he gave his victory speech and talked about how essential labor, labor unions and workers are to the future of our country?
I was very proud of, I was very proud of the work that the labor movement did on this campaign. But in many ways, I was very, very proud of Connor Lamb. Connor Lamb made it easy for us to endorse him because he ran as what I would call a traditional Democrat. You know, they wanted to say that he ran because he ran as a conservative. Again, these are blowhards that know nothing, weren't there, don't know what was done. Connor Lamb ran protecting Social Security, protecting pensions, protecting Medicare, Medicaid, protecting good jobs, talking about needing to have a balanced trade agenda. He ran as a traditional Democrat, and other Democrats would be wise to look at his campaign and see how he won and why he won and why he made it easy, not just for trade unionists. And yeah, we were more than happy and willing and excited to work with him, but he made it easy for working families. And there were many, many, many hundreds of crossovers from Republicans to Democrats because of his campaign.
Well, shouldn't that be a lesson for Democrats?
It should be. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I got something, just as our last point, I got something in the mail today inviting me. I ripped up through it in the garbage, so I probably have a hard time finding it. I got invited by a Democratic committee to a fundraiser to raise money at the such-and-such yacht club. I don't go to yacht clubs. You know, I got a boat I haven't had time to put in the water for 2 years. It's got a 35-horsepower motor on it. I don't go to yacht clubs. And to think that you should send me a note to invite me to a goddamn fundraiser, excuse the language, at a yacht club shows me how out of touch you are. If you want to have a good fundraiser where you invite me, ask me to go to a local union hall in Cleveland and do fundraising and have a leader of the Democratic caucus show up, a leader besides Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown doesn't need an invitation because he goes there willingly on his own.
That's right.
And drops into union halls unexpected and says, how's it going, guys? How's the men and women doing here? What can I do to help you? He's done every county in Ohio. And so he knows what working people think and what they need. So
Amen.
Rather than invite me to the yacht club, invite me to the union hall.
Leo Gerard, President of the United Steelworkers, thank you so much for your support and thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you. Keep up the great work, Sly.
Right. Thank you.
Sly's Office.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.